Well, the Food and Drug Administration has given its blessings to two versions of a new zero-calorie sweetener developed by the Coca-Cola Company and PepsiCo. The plan has also been a focal point, and the product that has been developed uses something called Ribena, if I'm not mistaken, which is an extract of the stevia plant. Coke and Cargill are marketing the sweetener Truvia, it's called. Pepsi is marketing the sweetener Pure Via. And Sue Nitzke is helping us sort it all out. Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, Chair of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at the UW-Madison, our guest here. And, I was looking at my various notes here and got flummoxed a little bit. But there's a lot to be flummoxed about sometimes.
I tell you, it's really complicated. So I thought, let's talk about this for a little while. The basic principles aren't that bad. Stevia's actually been around. The stevia plant and extracts of the stevia plant have been around probably, I don't know, hundreds of years in Paraguay, which is where it was first grown and used. But the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has never really formally approved this as an additive or a sweetener in the United States. And so because the rules for what you can market as a dietary supplement are so lax, it's been marketed officially as a dietary supplement but used unofficially as a sweetener in the U.S. probably for many years. And I bet many of your listeners have seen it in a little green box on the shelf, starting in health food stores and lately in grocery stores. So stevia products as sweeteners have been around for a long time. And kind of FDA has been saying, well, you know, it's not really approved yet as a sweetener, so be careful, you know, don't label it as a sweetener. You've probably seen, if you have a package, you can look on the side and probably says supplement facts rather than nutrient facts. And so now lately, some of the companies have said, well, we need to do what we need to do to get this on the approved additive sweetener list so we can market more products with stevia extracts. And so FDA just in this past week issued what's called a response letter. And to make a long story short, that response letter says FDA says they're not going to stop people from using this as an additive or a sweetener. They've done what needs to be done to qualify in the generally recognized as safe category. So I saw my first commercial for one of these sweetener products on TV yesterday, and Coke, Pepsi, Cargill, and other manufacturers are clearing the way for, I think, what will be a big marketing effort after the first of the year about, wouldn't you love to try this new low-calorie product made with this new natural sweetener?
And is there any value to the, you know, is the stevia plant have some magical values, or just the fact that there aren't any calories connected with the extract?
I don't think anybody has looked for or thought about trying to make it actually a nutritious product. The nutritional value would be that it's used in place of sucrose or sugar or high fructose corn syrup or, you know, the long list of things that have been used to sweeten products over the years, many of which have calories and extra calories that we could do without.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first place that we'll see this sweetener is in beverages. Some of those like Sobe and, you know, there's a lot of beverages that are kind of marketed as being functional products or good for you. And then the other things in there are what they'll say is good for you. And then it'll be sweetened with this, quote, natural sweetener. Natural meaning it's derived from the leaf of a plant rather than being synthesized in a laboratory or a factory. So I think it does have a lot of sort of marketing advantages and big company. The companies have been sort of waiting and they feel like FDA has been dragging its feet. You know, hurry up and let us market these products. There's money to be made, and there's New Year's resolutions coming up in a few days. So let's
we need
get
it
out
now.
There. Yeah, hurry up. So yeah, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but just this past week, as I said, FDA issued its letter saying, "Okay, go ahead."
So Rebiana is the extract, then.
That's right. Reb A is another name for it. And you already mentioned the brand names Truvia and Purvia, and probably a number of other brand names, depending on which company actually markets this. It's one of those things that it's been around for so long, and it's not all that new and novel. So I as far as I know, there's not going to be patents that prevent people from marketing it under various names. So that's going to make it a little confusing. But I'm pretty sure if you look in the ingredient list, there'll be something like Rebiana or Stevia in the name that's listed on the ingredient list of these new products.
You know, I haven't given the number yet, so let's give our listeners a chance to join in with questions. Our guest, Professor Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, Chair of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Our guest today, we're talking with her about this new zero-calorie sweetener, and certainly we, as almost always happens, we get off onto all kinds of nutritional issues when we visit with her. So join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org as we visit with Sue Nitzke today about the new generation of diet tricks and more things relating to diet and nutrition. Do you know, just a sort of a general comment, do diet drinks really make a difference to most people?
That's such a wonderful question, Larry. The answer is sometimes.
Yeah.
As you know, if you and I have both been around since diet drinks, diet soft drinks, Cyclamate and Saccharin and some of those early sweeteners first came on the market, and that was going to be the thing that made all Americans able to be thin.
Yeah.
And here we are getting fatter and fatter every year. Not you and me, of course.
No.
The American public. But in and of themselves, they're a handy tool. But just, drinking a diet beverage or even a functional beverage with zero calories is probably not going to make most people thinner or healthier. But if you're planning to eat less calories in 2009 and you're putting together some resolutions or just, planning to pay more attention to nutrition in the new year, diet soft drinks and diet products with artificial sweeteners or high-intensity sweeteners or whatever you call them can be helpful. So they can help you follow your plan, but they're not a substitute for a plan, and they don't automatically make people lose weight, even though every time you see them advertised on TV, there's always these beautiful, fit,
slim,
thin people having so much fun with this product. You just know you want to be like them.
all things considered, if I'm going to have a Coke, let's say, I might as well have a Diet Coke if I'm going to have one anyway, or an A&W root beer, which happens to be one of my favorites, the Diet A&W root beer. I have that instead.
Well, I could
save
tell
my
you
own.
My favorite root beer. It's made in Milwaukee and it has a little like lion on the front. And it comes in a diet version, and that's very true. But let me point out that water has been around for a long time. And if you're just thirsty, many of us have gotten out of the habit of just having a glass of water. If you want to be like Martha Stewart, you put a piece of lemon or cucumber or something in it to make it a little more interesting. And it's just a fine beverage. And another beverage that many of our colleagues in Wisconsin would want to make sure we mention is milk, low-fat milk. And I find many people are really confused and worried about, oh, milk is so fattening, la, la, la. Although skim milk really has a lot going for a few calories. That many people I've heard actually say that they think it's healthier to give their kids a sports drink or a diet drink instead of milk with their lunch. And I'm like, no, wait a minute, you know. So, you know, in nutrition, we have this sort of moderation and balance and all of that, those wonderful principles. And it's kind of easy to lose sight of them when we find a new product or a product that's marketing is a little overly convincing. So the basic beverages of low-fat milk and water are still recommended. And if you want to have a low-cal beverage like a Diet Coke or something like that once in a while, that's fine too. It's not going to hurt you. But if you use it so much that it substitutes for healthier beverages, then we need to talk.
Mary in Kenosha, we go to you now. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for having the show. Okay, I'm diabetic. Can this be used in baking? I mean, I don't drink any of those pops. I just drink water and milk.
Mm-hmm.
And baked goods are a problem because they put corn syrup in and a number of other things. Can this be used in baked goods too, or is it just for things that you drink?
I think the baked goods will be a while before they appear on the market. The first companies that are like all ready to go, they've got the formulations and the manufacturing plants, are going to be the beverages. But I think if the supply and the economics are favorable, we'll soon see other types of products like, I'm just guessing, puddings or ice cream or donuts or whatever those kinds of things are also made with these stevia-based sweeteners. And as far as I know, there's no special concern for diabetics. They would be interchangeable with other what we call high-intensity sweeteners like aspartame or acesulfame K. Those are marketed under brand names like Sunet and Equal.
Mm-hmm. But do you think this one is safer than those? Because I've been avoiding those, too.
Well, I don't think those are unsafe, so I don't know how to answer that question.
Things about some of them, so I've stayed away from those, too, and I just wondered.
Well, you know, I've looked into this quite a bit. I know people are concerned, and if you're concerned, just don't drink them because there's no, you know, they're not essential in your diet.
Sure.
But if you're, you know, especially if you have diabetes, you want to be really careful about your sugar intake, and they are a tool. You can choose to use them or not use them. The big studies by scientific groups, like there was one recently, Mike Parisa from our own Food Research Institute here on campus was part of a study group that looked into the safety of aspartame. And they reviewed dozens of studies and they had a big panel of scientists and they really couldn't find any reason to say that people should be concerned.
Okay.
There have been lots and lots of things on the internet, you know, it gives you brain cancer or headaches or this disease or that disease. And to look for good scientific proof for that information is really hard to come by. But nonetheless, you know, they're synthetic. And if they don't feel like real food to you and you want to stay away from them, there's no essential reason that you have to use any of the what we call high-intensity sweeteners.
Right. Well, is this new one then not natural or is it considered natural?
Well, it's going to be marketed as natural. As you may know, natural is kind of a fuzzy term, and it doesn't have a lot of legal definitions to restrict the marketing. But it is an extract. The extraction process is long and complicated and uses a lot of chemicals. I would maybe equate it to, you know, if decaffeinated coffee bothers you because it's gone through a lot of processing, then this might be in that same kind of category. But it comes from a leaf, and so it's not manufactured, and therefore it's, I think, legitimately marketed as more natural than the other high-intensity sweeteners we're used to.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mary, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Sue Netzke, our guest today, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist. I'm Larry Mueller as we talk about diet and health here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking diet and nutrition today with Sue Netzke, and Paul in Sun Prairie is up next. Paul, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks, Larry and Sue. I have several different comments. The first comment is, it seems very interesting that for many, many years, people have been trying to market stevia as a sweetener, but the FDA has said, no, you can't do that. That's not safe. It's not proven. And then all of a sudden we get a couple of multinational corporations that not only take it, but they alter it. They extract it. They purify it. They go through chemicals. They slice and dice it. And now all of a sudden it's safe. One of the comments I would like to make, I myself am an organic farmer, and I would caution people to drink anything that's processed that comes out of a can or a box or a bag, or anything. We need to get back to real food. And one of the main real foods we need to get back to is simple H2O, water, none of us drink enough water, or practically none of us drink enough water. Of course, milk in many different forms is also a very good option, as are juices. Another comment I just wanted to make maybe has more to do with the last show than maybe has a little bit more to do with the last show than with this one is oftentimes in science we get something that makes headlines that says this particular chemical is good or this particular antioxidant or whatever is good. The problem is nature, and we as humans are part of nature, by the way. Nature is a very complex system. And because nature is a very complex system, things interact with each other. And whenever we get down to something that's a single item research, I always have a lot of skepticism of that.
What do you think, Sue?
Well, the caller brings up some important concerns. One that he mentioned is that stevia has been around a long time and people have used it as a sweetener kind of unofficially, and FDA said that there was not enough evidence of safety, therefore they weren't approving it. He mentioned that now this new form is highly purified and now FDA says it's safe. It's my understanding that the highly purified form is desirable because the if you just take the leaf of the stevia plant and do your kind of home extractions, you'll get a product with a menthol-like aftertaste. Hmm. To my knowledge, some people even perceive an aftertaste, a sweet aftertaste, with the purified form of stevia. But I think different people will notice that, some more than others. When it comes to nutrition, there's the science and the biology and the chemistry, and all of that is important in determining a product's safety. But when it comes to personal choice, there's also philosophy and, you know, your approach to your relationship with your food. And I think this caller makes a good point that we need to consider all of these things in deciding what we're going to eat and what marketing messages we're going to ascribe to when we go to the grocery store, because as Americans, as you know, we have probably 50,000 food products available to us when we even just go to our local, major supermarket. So there are a lot of choices, and now there's going to be even more. And that's why I thought it would be good to talk about this today, because it is a personal choice. This, along with all the other sweeteners we were mentioning earlier, is not something that's essential for Americans to use, but I think it'll be a handy tool for some people as they look for ways to control their calorie intake.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Paul, for calling. And as you know, PepsiCo said it's going to be releasing three new zero-calorie Sobe Life water flavors. We've got Fuji apple pear, black and blueberry, and yum berry pomegranate.
I'm sure a lot of consumer studies went into deciding those names. How can I succinctly respond to that? I don't buy these products myself. I think they're overpriced, and I don't see any advantage over drinking water and milk like the previous caller
mentioned.
Like
Paul was saying, yeah.
That's right. Paul hit it on the head. I find some of the marketing annoying, like implying that these really have some kind of health benefits, that it's going to make a dramatic difference in whether you are or not your immune system is functioning and all of that. And I think the evidence behind that, there's bits and pieces, but there's no reason to sort of throw out the normal, quote, whatever normal means, but
right.
the more basic food products that we've always been using, thinking that these new expensive, fancy items are going to be somehow better.
Sue Nitzky, our guest today. You can join in with your questions as we talk diet and nutrition with her at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Zeroed in a bit on the new diet drinks we're going to be seeing on the market from Coke and Pepsi and others as well, I'm sure. Any question, good, is just fine with us in the nutrition area. One of our emails, Georgina in La Crosse, says, I'm not as interested in the caloric side of stevia as a diet tool as I am the health benefits of not using sugar or high fructose corn syrup. How does your body process it differently than these from these other sugars, and how does this impact tooth decay, diabetes?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. And, well, two important diseases to think about.
Absolutely.
One of our callers, I think it was Mary earlier, mentioned that she has diabetes. So as I said, these high-intensity sweeteners, of which stevia products will add to the choices, help diabetics and other people concerned with their carbohydrate or sugar or calorie intake, you know, make some adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
As far as tooth decay goes, whether it's sugar or starch or any form of carbohydrate that the bacteria on your teeth can use for energy and thus make acid that causes tooth decay, all forms of carbohydrate are potentially what we call karyogenic or calorie promoting. So bread is no better, for instance, than a piece of candy when it comes to how it affects your teeth.
Oh.
I mean, nutritionally, of course, I'd rather have you eat the whole grain bread.
Well, sure.
So from a calorie perspective, the stevia-based sweeteners are somewhere in the range of 300 times sweeter than sugar on a gram-per-gram basis. So the amount in your food is so small, and the amount of carbohydrate it by itself would bring to your diet is negligible. And so for those reasons, I haven't seen any studies on it, but I'd be amazed if it had any particular concerns when it comes to dental decay. And from that perspective, it would be better than sugar-sweetened products. So we mentioned the diabetes, we mentioned the calories. The safety of the product, there are some what we call in vitro studies where cells in a petri dish, let's say, or a test tube, when they look at how, if you actually put these stevia extracts in with certain kinds of tissues, there's some DNA changes that should be followed up on at some point in time to see if it has any meaning. Most of, as far as I've read and the people I've talked to say, it, you know, it's pretty esoteric whether that has any concern. And obviously FDA didn't think it was important enough to hold up what amounts to an approval in this response letter. So I personally would use it if you like it or stay away from it if you're concerned, but I don't know any scientific reasons to think that this product has any automatic safety concerns.
Okay. Shireen in Springbrook, it's your turn now. Hi, Shireen.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm disappointed that they're going to use stevia because my sister sent me some and I tried it. And for me personally, it makes a terribly bitter aftertaste.
Uh-huh.
And I really don't like it, so I hate to think that they're putting it in other foods.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. I tried it, and I didn't get a bitter aftertaste. I actually recently did some programs with our extension educators around the state of Wisconsin, and I brought this with me, and we all tasted lemonade made with sugar versus lemonade made with stevia, just so we could see what we thought of it. And a few people described an aftertaste. Everybody kind of had a different kind of term for it, you know, syrupy, or one person thought they detected the menthol flavor. One person thought it was kind of bitter. One said it was tasted kind of, I don't know, chemically and la, la, la. So, you know, I
taste
think
buds differ a little bit.
There probably are some individual differences in the perception and also in the product that you use. As I mentioned earlier, this new approval is for an extract of the stevia plant known as Rebiana A. And it's very pure. And the idea is that it won't have as many of these flavor complications as you might have noticed with some of the other stevia products that have been marketed as supplements.
Thank you, because I to me it was very bitter and left an aftertaste in my mouth.
Yeah, well, it may or may not happen with the new products.
Thanks, Shireen, for calling. Don in Fish Creek emailed us to say, my feeling is that this is a simply greenwashing of soft drinks to spur slumping sales as the public is becoming more aware of the negative effects of sweetened beverages. increased incidence of diabetes and rampant obesity. What information is available along the lines of growing this plant? And here's an interesting question. The possible negative effects of farming tropical land to produce more than the naturally occurring quantities of the parent plant.
Well, I'm not an expert on the last question. The implications for farming tropical land, I'm sure, would be the same as if they were going to be growing other crops in the same kind of concerns. Let's see. So the first comment was about soda manufacturers looking for ways to boost their slumping sales. I mentioned marketing. I think we're thinking along the same lines. New products are always kind of exciting, and I think the companies were especially anxious to be able to put some products out early in the new year when people traditionally become very diet conscious. And I think, you know, I'm very sympathetic and personally do some things to use locally produced foods and, you know,
right.
And favor things from the farmer's market and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I would be happier if we could actually grow it here. Now, I have come across people who grow stevia in their house, like a house plant, and then take a leaf and kind of squeeze it and put it in their tea. I haven't tried that myself, and I'm not about to, but... I know people have done it and say that that's a fine alternative. I don't know where you get the plant, and
right.
maybe the horticulture people can tell you if how to go about that if you want to. That's beyond my knowledge.
All right. Well, George in Adams has a question for you or a comment. George, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a diabetic for about 50 years, a type 1 diabetic, and used just about everything for sweetener. In the last couple of years, I've been using agave nectar and xylitol, which work very well and help me maintain my blood sugar. I just wondered what your take is on those two products, and I'll take my answer off the air, okay?
All right.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Well, xylitol is one of many products that are we refer to as polyols or sugar alcohols. And they've been approved by FDA for quite a while. They're used, if you pull out a package of sugar-free gum, you'll probably see xylitol or sorbitol or maltitol or one of these sugar alcohols in the ingredient list. They're very handy as one of these concentrated sweeteners. Xylitol, sorbitol, mannitol, erythritol, isomalt, lactitol, there's just a long list of items in this category. And they tend to have a range of calories. They're higher than zero, and they're higher than most of the very high-intensity sweeteners like Equal or sucralose. But they have a place in the diet of diabetics, and they're very handy for people that are manufacturing some of those candies that are marketed as sugar-free candies.
Oh.
You know, like the little gummy bears that are sugar-free or some of the sugar-free products in the candy store. I'd rather have you munch on a carrot, but if you really, you know, if you really need a piece of sugar-free gum or sugar-free candy or that sort of thing, this kind of sweetener is a handy item. And I'm not familiar with agave nectar. I assume it's high in fructose, which is a very sweet form of sugar that comes from fruit, and therefore might be handy in cooking for Georgian Adams, who called and said that he likes to use it, but I haven't any personal experience with it.
Just as an aside here, all this talk about food is making me hungry. And Paul, I should mention to folks, Paul Novak coming up in 10 minutes or so to talk with us about bread baking, and he always brings a loaf of bread. So, All right, but let's get back to Gene and Ashland next. By the way, again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn now to Gene. Gene, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I was wondering if you're familiar with the National Institutes of Health study of stevia. It's been on PubMed, available for downloading, printing out for maybe 5 years. And even all during the time that doctors have been saying, oh, there's no studies, no studies, there have been. National Institutes, may, you can request also its relation to using for diabetics. Also, I have two cookbooks using stevia. They're available through your Whole Foods, natural food stores, or from the book publishing company in Somerville, Tennessee. The bookstores all have it. They will order for it. If they don't have it, they'll order it for you. All kinds of recipes, and including the fact that you can't use stevia the same way as sweeteners that have some bulk and contribute to the texture of baked goods. You have to adjust and learn how to do it. But there are all kinds of naturally sweetened recipes. You can also buy the stevia plant and grow it as it's a tropical plant, but you can grow it in the household as a house plant. It looks like a nice, simple, many-leaved plant. You can just break off the leaves and use them as they are. You can buy dried leaves. You can buy powdered leaves. You can buy powder in 8-ounce bottles. You can buy...
you can buy a lot.
So, yeah, Jean, can we ask Jean if she has noticed the aftertaste that some of the earlier callers asked about?
There's supposed to be a tiny aftertaste, and if you're finding some of that aftertaste, they say there are some foods that would be naturally more... tasty with the use of stevia, such as lemon-flavored, like lemonade or something.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay, and Jean brings up an important point with many of these what we call intense sweeteners, is that you can't just use them in their pure form in substitution for sugar in a recipe, because if this is 300 times sweeter than sugar, when you buy it, there's going to be a packet of something that's mostly something else.
Yeah.
You know, some sort of starch product or something to give it some bulk so that you can actually add it to your tea or use it however you want to. So the recipe use can be kind of tricky. And as Jean mentioned, this product has been around as a supplement or a kind of a folk product for many years. And so there is a lot of experience with it. And therefore, I think there'll be even more information. I did look at the NIH summary that Jean mentioned. I didn't. It was a couple years old, and it wasn't all that informative. But yes, there are good, reliable sources of information on this product, and I think a targeted search for information, starting with PubMed, is a very good strategy, and much preferable to just Googling the word stevia and believing anything that comes up.
Yeah. Thank you, Jean. Thanks very much for your call. I want to give Ron in Wales a chance to get on, too. Ron, hi to you.
Hi. Doing a little traveling here, but just got back into Wisconsin and heard the program. I had a little experience with using stevia and found that I didn't have an aftertaste or anything. It was just fine. It was a little bit sweet for me, so I cut to a half a packet. But after using it for about 2 weeks, I found that it was causing... I have type 1 diabetes, and that's why I was using it. And I found that it caused frequent urination. And I sort of came to it by a process of elimination as to why is this occurring. And after discontinuing its use, after about a week, my urination pattern went back to totally normal. But I was urinating practically every 30 minutes. Oh. And so that is a possible after effect for me anyhow. I wondered if you could comment on that. And then also, just recently, a friend who had been going to a nutritionist virtually forbid the use of Splenda in any form, and I've used it quite a bit and really find it a very good substitute, but now they're telling me all kinds of horror stories
about it. Okay, well, let's give Sue a chance to comment here.
When a person with type 1 diabetes, as Ron mentioned, has differences in their urination patterns, that's something to discuss with a physician, because frequent urination can be a sign that your blood sugar levels are changed or high or something like that. So I won't comment on that. That's more of a medical issue, but I'm glad that he noticed it and was concerned about it. The quote nutritionist that said not to use sucralose may or may not have been a qualified dietitian. In the state of Wisconsin, we still don't have any rules that forbid anybody from calling themselves a nutritionist. As I mentioned, sucralose and other products that have been identified as safe, I've looked at the studies. I'm pretty convinced that there shouldn't be a problem, but if people philosophically or just because they don't like the idea of using these kind of, quote, artificial products, there's no reason to use them if you don't like them. But please don't scare other people away. be honest about your reasons for not liking them, and don't try to claim that they're not safe when the scientific evidence isn't behind you.
Well, and just a lot of people say, no, but I've read all these studies that show that that's not the case. But a lot of times those studies are not really rigorous studies.
Right. And,
or anecdotal.
14 rats or some kind of a tissue thing. I mean, the overwhelming evidence that's been reviewed by the Food and Drug Administration shows that these products are not of concern from a safety standpoint. From a philosophical or personal standpoint,
it's a different story.
That's a whole different realm of concerns, and people are free to use them or not use them as they prefer.
Sue, are you a bread baker? Do you ever bake?
Oh, gosh, it smells good in here. And yes, I am, as a matter of fact. I love to bake bread, especially on a cold, snowy day.
I'll tell you what. I thank you very much for being with us today and appreciate the comment. And, you'll be back, I hope, soon, and we'll talk probably another issue relating to diet and nutrition. Thanks, Sue. Sue Nitzky, our guest, and we were talking bread because our next guest is Paul Novak of Madison. Noted bread maker, he's been on our show many times, and we'll be talking about Yulakaka and breads of the holiday season. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.